the Senate Committee on Rules. This is Thursday, May 29th. On the agenda today, we have a major introduction request, a possible reconsideration of a bill, and two additional House measures for hearing and possible work session. Madam Co-Chair.
Senator Klarna, I would move that we approve drafting of an introduction of the Sine Die resolution.
Work session first.
Yeah, you want
to... Oh, I'm sorry. Work session. Sorry about that.
I got
work
so excited to even say those words. Not trying to raise false expectations.
No, we just we like to be
fair. Date on doesn't it? June 22nd. Date on.
Yeah.
Yes.
Somewhere along there.
Jim. Co-chairs, this will be drafted without dates, and I'm told that it's done about this time of the session and should be no particular signal as to anything happening.
Senator Klarna, I would move that we approve the Sine Die resolution for drafting and introduction.
Senator Brown has moved that we approve the major drafting for the Sine Die resolution for drafting and introduction. Any discussion?
May I vote twice, Madam Chair?
Well, none of us have voted even once yet, Senator Burdick, that you can...
Getting that straightened out here.
Okay. Any objection? If not, so ordered. Close the work session on measure drafting and introduction, and open a work session on...
Well, you have a possible reconsideration, so you would open it for possible reconsideration if that's what you want to do.
You want to do that one first, everybody.
I move that we reconsider the vote by which
I open a work session on House Bill 2763. Senator Brown.
I move that we possibly reconsider the vote by which we considered House Bill 2763.
Jim?
Point of no, we don't. Point of clarification.
Senator Beyer, point of clarification.
Is the motion to possibly reconsider or is the motion to reconsider?
I think it's to possibly reconsider, but I can make it a little harsher and say reconsider.
Well, that's the motion that would do something. That's what I
Right. I'm not sure we want to do anything. I think that's the issue.
I think we...
You'll need to suspend the rules in order to reconsider it.
I told you so.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. It is on our agenda.
My understanding is you do need to. We can check with the Secretary of the Senate if you'd like to. This bill was passed out previously mm-hmm. to the floor. So that's why I understand you need to suspend the rules to bring it back.
Okay.
It's kind of a mere formality because it takes four votes to suspend the rules. It would take four votes to do anything with it anyway. So.
Okay. We'll go into we'll close the...
Forward. Okay. We have a motion in front of us, correct?
Yes. So we're wanting some discussion.
But is the but I guess my
Secretary Senate on the phone.
My issue the motion to possibly reconsider. We're either reconsidering or we're not.
But may I try another motion? Would you like to withdraw the motion?
We don't know that we want.
But
okay, whatever. Okay.
I just
took it out.
She was. Jim Stembridge, would you just fill us in while we're waiting for the Secretary of Senate to get here?
Members, this is on House Bill 2763, which you passed out with a conceptual amendment last week. The conceptual amendment had a little bit of difficulty when it got to the Legislative Council. We added the term or county. The measure defines districts and electoral district, and conflicted with your adding or county. So a further amendment was drafted to the dash 2 to take care of that problem. In addition, there was an understanding when the dash 1 amendments were agreed upon that there would be refunds for fees paid in excess of what the bill called for the May 2003 election. The dash 2 amendments, which you have a copy of, reflect those two changes. And The concern was that the bill needed to come back through committee to have those changes made in order to go on.
Can you show us those changes on the lines?
If you look at the dash 2...
I am, but talk to Senator Byrne. Okay, we just didn't know what we wanted.
Okay. Okay, Senator. If you look at on page 1 of the dash 2 amendments in lines 19 through 22, you'll see electoral district is defined as being a county and the part of a city located within a county. That takes care of the county candidate portion. And if you look at on page 2, under paragraph 2, candidates of any special district office paid a filing fee prior to the effective date of this 2003 act, you'll see down on line 13, it says refund. The county clerk shall refund to the candidate an amount equal to the difference between the fee paid and the fee specified in this bill.
So you started with line 8 and...
On page 2, lines 8 through 15 provide for the refund.
The motion before us, Senator Brown, would you repeat it, please? This motion before...
To suspend the rules
to reconsider the vote by which we passed 2763. Discussion, please. Any objection? Not so moved.
I move that we reconsider the vote, but now we have to do a reconsideration.
Senator Brown moves that we reconsider the vote by which we moved Senate House Bill 2763 to the floor. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved.
And I think technically you have the bill back the way it was with the dash 1. If you wish to substitute the dash 2 amendments, you could make a motion to that effect.
Madam Chair, I would move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2763, and it's probably we all learned a lesson.
Senator Brown moves the... dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2763. Discussion, Senator Burdick. Any other discussion? Any objection to moving the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2763? Not so moved. Senator Brown?
I would move 2763 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 2763 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair.
Discussion.
Parliamentary inquiry. Do we need to delete the conceptual dash 1 amendments?
I think it was understood that that's what happened. If you'd like to clarify that the dash 1s are taken off, you're welcome to do that. Yes.
I would amend my motion that to also include the fact that we were only amending, including the dash 2 amendments, not the dash 1 amendments.
Senator Brown moves that we have agreed to remove the dash 1 amendments from the bill, and only the dash 2 amendments will be added to House Bill 2763. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so moved. Now, Senator Brown.
Now I move House Bill 2763 as amended with the dash 2 only amendments to the Senate floor for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 2763 with only the dash 2 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Boy, this committee is not run nearly as well as the last one. The last time I was in revenue, we didn't have any of these problems.
We didn't have a problem, Senator Corcoran, until you got here.
Have I made any of these motions? No.
Sorry.
Just because you're the chair.
Okay.
I'll take the blame.
Any objections?
Any objections to moving the bill? If not, so moved. Close the work session on House Bill 2763 and open a work session on House Bill 2575A. A public hearing and possible work session.
We're going to switch up.
See, he's so disgusted he's leaving.
Burned him up.
I figured I'd be the carrier, yeah.
Vicki Chamberlain, come on up.
See it. Get posters.
Good afternoon, Chair Clarno, members of the Committee for the Record. I'm Vicki Chamberlain, the Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. We have a bill that the TSCC requested to assist us in alleviating some timelines we had in a new licensure design that we brought to the legislature in 1997. And I'm not going to go through a long history because Dr. Mighton, who used to have this job...
Excuse me, Vicki.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Representative Backlund, would you like to come up, please, and share the... Vicki, do you mind if Representative Backlund goes ahead?
Co-Chair Clarno and Co-Chair Brown, this is a rough committee, I think. I'm a little bit reluctant to come up. But,
you should be.
But,
well, it's nice that you had a haircut before you showed up anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that goes for the shave as well, I'm sure. Yeah, no.
Won't you say?
Two strikes and you're out in this committee, buddy.
Good job.
This bill is dead.
I thought it just made the job easier.
Shall I begin?
Yes, please.
Thank you very much. For the record, I am Representative Vic Backlund from District 25, and I'm here to advocate on behalf of House Bill 2575, the -10 amendments. A quick history. Vicki Chamberlain brought the suggestion of a bill to the House Education Committee, of which I am the chair, and we made that a committee bill. We felt there was a need to review a law passed in 1997 and implemented in 1999. We heard from a lot of different folks in the education community, the OEA and the Portland Public Schools and others. Plus, I had my own feelings, having been a high school teacher for 37 years prior to being elected to this body for the first time in 1998. And so through that interest on the part of a lot of people, we moved House Bill 2575 with one of my amendments. It was rather an aggressive amendment, and it probably might not have found favor in the Senate. And so an amendment was brought to me that I thought was a good one. We discussed it with Vicki Chamberlain and with the Oregon Education Association. And so we like the -10 amendments. And we think that these amendments will accomplish what we want to accomplish with regard to teacher licensure, which is to provide more flexibility. And so we think that's a good thing. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions, but that's kind of a quick history as to how 2575 came into being.
Thank you. Questions? No questions. My, you got off very easy.
Yes, Co-Chair, I found that when I was a teacher, I lectured a lot, and when I finished and no one said anything, I knew that I had either covered everything perfectly or nothing got through. I'm hoping the former is the case.
Oh, by all
this
means.
This particular testimony.
Most of his classes were probably in sixth or seventh period when the kids couldn't wait to get the hell out of class.
I was just going to share with you, you have a very bright and progressive committee here. So, yes, I'm sure we did. Thank you, Representative. Vicki?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't have much to add, frankly. I just want to emphasize, however, that the Commission is very committed to working out the issues that we've heard this session, and among them is the master's degree issue. And we plan to tackle it aggressively. We have it on every one of our next sets of agendas, and as you'll notice, the amendments say that we'll come back and report to the interim committees and to the next session about how we're going to make this work for everybody. And so we just want an opportunity to look at the policy issues on why it would be good or not good and come back and report to you.
And you are in favor of the dashed hands?
Very much so.
Okay. Any questions of Vicki Chamberlain? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Linda Samick and David Mighton. I hope I haven't spoken your names wrong. Good afternoon. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Mighton. As Vicki Chamberlain mentioned a few moments ago, I was executive director of PSPC for the last 13 years, prior to June 2002. And with me today is Linda Samick, who is the coordinator of teacher education for the commission, and who worked over a period of several years on the development of the new licensure design and requirements. We've handed out to you a piece of testimony that essentially recounts the events that took place from the establishment of the 21st Century School Act in 1991 through the adoption of the new licensure requirements in 1997. We thought that information might not be readily available to you. You would like to have detail on any of the particulars of it, we could provide that for you. But we've come today essentially to be available to answer questions and to register our support for both not passing the A engrossed version of 2575, but adopting the amendments that are dash 10.
I would just like to add that I'm currently the director of teacher education at Western Baptist College here in Salem, and this is something that we believe firmly is important. Current research shows that the most important issues in children learning are that their teachers are well prepared. And
did you say your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Linda Samick, director of teacher ed at Western Baptist College. That professional development is something that's extremely important for teachers after they've entered the profession. And so I would also agree with Dr. Mighton that it's important that we support the amendments that you have before you today.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you both very much. Jim Green? I did get a note that some folks didn't want to.
I didn't need to, Madam Chair, if you don't need me to.
I was just going to add testimony in support of the amendments.
Nobody ever wants to testify with me. I've noticed that in FERS, committees, stuff. Nobody.
You didn't think that you'd get away with
it. No, I didn't think I did, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association. I'm here just to lend support to the amendments. We worked on the amendments with OEA, Representative Backlund, and TSBC, and we do support the Dash 10 amendments.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions of Mr. Green?
Yes,
thank you very much. Oh, Senator Barr, seat.
Did you support the Angros version as it's coming out of the House?
Ms. Chairman, we did support the A engrossed version as it came out. Or Madam Chair, Senator Beyer, we did support that version as it came out of the House. Understanding that there were some problems with that, we work with the parties concerned to get the A10 amendments. And it does take care of all the problems that were identified by educators out in the field with regard to the initial license and those folks not being able to, after renewing it once, not being able to go on to the continual license for a variety of reasons. This fixes that problem and allows those folks to continue on in the education.
Another question? Thank you very much, Jim. Lisa Zavala? Zavala.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Lisa Savala with the Oregon University System. I just really wanted to also echo what was said about the Dash 10 amendments. We would support those and would encourage you to adopt them and move the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, we're going to Senator Brown's in a room next door, and she wants to vote on the bill. So we'll go ahead and close. Anyone else want to speak on the bill? Now we'll close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2575. Senator Atkinson?
I would move the Dash 10 amendments.
Senator Atkinson moves the Dash 10 amendments on House Bill 2575. And we'll wait a second. Hold your motion. Is she coming right away?
He's just running out. Cautiously optimistic.
I should have asked. Is everyone else ready to move the bill? Are you ready to vote for the bill? Okay. Senator Brown, I'm sorry. I should have.
He's blazing.
He's blazing. Allow Senator Brown to vote on it when she comes back. Senator Atkinson has moved the Dash 10 amendments to House Bill 2575. Discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Personally, I think the bill is better without amendments, so I'm going to vote against the amendments.
We have one no vote against the amendments. Any other objections against the Dash 10 amendments? Not, the Dash 10 are adopted. Senator Atkinson.
Madam Chair, I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 2575 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is that your motion? Discussion? Objection? No objection. So moved. Close the work session on House Bill 2575 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2817. Are you on this one as well? And Jan? Well, you're to speak on the other one. I forgot, so go ahead.
That's all right. I never mind not speaking,
okay.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2817A is before us, and this bill would create an 11-member Oregon Post-Secondary Education Council Task Force. And this task force would exist for the purpose of increasing coordination among Oregon post-secondary institutions. The duties of the council would include identifying models of statewide post-secondary education planning, coordination, monitoring, and policy analysis from other states, and also the possible beneficial outcome of creating a statewide post-secondary education council. The council would monitor, analyze, and coordinate statewide post-secondary education policy. The measure also creates a 10-member advisory committee to assist the task force and directs the task force to report its findings and recommendations to the next legislative assembly no later than January 31 of 2005. And it would sunset the task force on January 2, 2006.
Thank you, Jan. First, Senator Morse and Representative Backlund. Come on up, please.
You again.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Which one of you is going to speak first?
I'll defer to senior already.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Co-Chair Carno and members of the Rules Committee. Again, for the record, my name is Vic Backlund, representative from House District 25, and I bring you House Bill 2817, which Jan has very ably gone over the basic intent of the bill. You may recall in the 2001-2003 session, we passed House Bill 2015, which attempted to do pretty much the same things that this 2817 would do. That was passed, but due to the recession, was never funded. And so the point, though, that the committee or the bill would do is still very valid, and that is get representatives from the OUS, from the independent private universities and colleges, and community college people together to discuss, to analyze, to evaluate, to look at other models, and in general elevate higher education to include all of the players. And I don't know if you've thought about this, but Oregon has 17 private independent universities or colleges, nonprofit. One of which very prominently displayed is, of course, across the street. They have now some 30,000 students. They graduate more than 6,000 annually. They provide 30% of Oregon's baccalaureate degrees, 32% of its master's degrees, and the majority of its professional degrees. It seems to me that these independent nonprofit universities and colleges need to be brought into higher education discussions. I was very impressed in our education committee, where this bill came to us in the House, when Dr. Brandt of George Fox University indicated that he had been in Oregon as president of George Fox University for 13 years, and only once in that time period had he been in the same room with representatives from the Oregon University system, from our public universities. And so it seemed very apparent to me that it's clear. We need, I don't know, well, coordination is a good word. We need to be able to get together. I find it very difficult to believe that it is not advantageous to have communication and discussion. I think if we could have communication and discussion, chances to visit and talk on a regular basis, we would have far fewer problems in our society. So I believe this is a good concept. It's not a precedent-setting one. We did it in 2001. We simply couldn't fund it. And so I'm hoping that the committee will look favorably upon House Bill 2817. And I would attempt to answer any questions that you might have on me.
Questions of Representative Backlund? You've just done such a fine job.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Frank Morse. I'm the state senator from District 8, Albany and Corvallis. I come today with literally one foot in the private camp and the other foot in the public camp. I hold undergraduate degrees from Northwest Christian College. I hold a graduate degree from Oregon State University, and of course Oregon State is in my district. I represent Oregon State. My interest is in serving both the publics and the privates as well. I think that House Bill 2817 is a meaningful recognition of the role that the privates play in our state. I won't repeat the statistics that Representative Backlund had stated, but I would add to those 15% of Oregon's students attend private colleges and universities, and there are 18,000 of those students from the state of Oregon that are enrolled in these private institutions. Some of the accusations against the privates have focused on, well, they're just for rich kids to go to school, to the privates. But I would point out to you some information in the last available statistics. This happens to be dated 1995, so it is dated somewhat. But the median income for independent colleges families is $45,743. It was in 1995. The median income for the publics, interestingly enough, is $47,210. So if you look at it on the basis of public assistance, for on the basis of means testing, the students that attend the privates are from families of lower income than those that go to the public universities. Looking at the cost of attending an independent school is approximately $29,000 average cost, of which 84% receive financial aid of that amount, resulting in direct costs to students that is about the same as it is for those attending the public universities. I would agree with Representative Backlund. This bill does provide an opportunity to engage in meaningful dialogue, recognizing the contribution that the private colleges and universities do bring to this state. It is significant, and there should be dialogue between the publics and the privates, and this is the opportunity to do that in terms of setting the public policy for higher education in our state. This is a good bill, and I would hope that you would support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Questions?
Question.
Senator Corcoran.
So I want to play devil's advocate for a second. You're both from the wrong party and the party of accountability, and you're creating this committee to solve what problem?
If I may speak, Co-Chair Kleino, Senator Corcoran, my view is when I listen to the presidents of the private nonprofit universities, initially this session I had the opportunity of a luncheon with Senator Brown, and we heard some dialogue at that time that the presidents of the private universities felt a real need to have a real forum, an opportunity on a regular basis to meet with their counterparts from the public, the Oregon University system. And from that came House Bill 2817. And so, again, I think my answer, Senator, is that we are promoting dialogue, we're promoting conversation, we're promoting discussion, we're promoting communication, and I think those are very, very necessary and needed things for our university system and or our post-high school education system, I guess I should say.
Madam Chair, Senator Corcoran, as you are well aware, the opportunity need grants go to private, those students attending privates as well as the publics. That's just one area. But the opportunity to talk about, degree offerings, things that, so that they're being coordinated between the publics and the privates. Conversation is not a bad thing. And I think this is all this bill requires, is to be in dialogue about how we deliver education in Oregon.
Well, Madam Chair, just to follow up,
follow up.
We have this existing commission. It's called the Joint Boards Articulation Commission. It was established in 1992 by the Board of Ed and the Board of Higher Ed to encourage active cooperation and collaboration among sectors and within systems. And then it mentions K-12 community colleges and baccalaureate granting institutions in order to achieve the most effective and efficient articulation possible. And they have private college representation on that committee. So, it seems in some regards that this is somewhat redundant, but am I missing? Is there something different that this group would do that the articulation group can't?
Co-Chair Kleino and Senator Corcoran, I think that's an excellent question. And my answer is based on my experience in going back to 2001 and again this session and my conversations with particularly on the campus of Willamette University. Whatever there has been in the past, the council that you just read about or from is apparently not effective because none of the presidents from the privates or to my knowledge in 2001 when House Bill 2015 was passed, this group that you read about never came into play. And so I don't want to say it's a non-entity, but I'm saying that apparently none of the presidents or none of the representatives from the privates or the publics or even the community college have active participation in it or are particularly aware of it. And so I guess my point is it seems there's a need right now, and so I'm hoping that the House Bill 2817 will fill that need.
Well, Madam Chair, there is one of the members of that commission is a provost at Concordia University. So, I mean, they have representation, and I don't know particularly what their work is either, mm-hmm. you know, frankly, but just kind of a curiosity that they would.
Mm-hmm. You know. Senator Corcoran, I see signed up is someone from the. Gary Andine is here. Perhaps he can address the questions you've asked.
Okay.
I hope.
Thank you.
I hope. Any further questions of our representative and senator? Not. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Duncan Weiss and Harvey Matthews.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name's Duncan Wise. I'm president of the Oregon Business Council. I'm actually passing out Harvey's testimony. He's tied up, and he may be in a minute, but we've been partners on this bill. Let me offer the Business Council perspective. We're in support of this bill, and it's actually, this is in many ways a continuation of a conversation that began last session with House Bill 2015, which we supported at the time and which was passed by the legislature, to take a look at post-secondary education governance. My own perspective on this bill is that it's really very vital that we take a look at the whole system of post-secondary education governance and really ask the question, is the state institutions, is the state governing system and budgeting system that we use for post-secondary education the right one to support the important needs we have for post-secondary education in the years ahead? We took a look at this question back in 1996 when we supported a governor's commission on post-secondary education for Governor Kitzhaber and took a look at some of the dramatic changes that are happening in higher education in America and in Oregon. And we reached a number of conclusions in that commission that I think really support what we're trying to do in this bill today. We concluded that the demand for post-secondary education is going to grow dramatically in the years ahead as we see more and more need for student access in the early years and for continuing education throughout life. We saw the demand for ever more nimble institutions that could respond to a variety of needs at different times, different places, at every corner of the state. And as we looked at those institutions, we saw a blurring of lines between what you would traditionally think of as a community college, a university, and between public and private universities, frankly. So, for example, you'll see in Bend, you know, the cooperation with the community colleges and the four-year institutions to deliver services. We see a lot of partnerships emerging to serve needs. With that context, we then asked, do we have the institutions at the state level, do we have the budgeting systems at the state level to serve the needs that Oregon has in post-secondary education? As we looked at those systems, we observed a number of things. First of all, we have three different silos, if you will, that address post-secondary education. You've got a community college system, the university system, and then the Student Assistance Commission. And those really operate independently of each other. They also operate in very different ways. As you look at the OUS system in particular, it operates more as a state agency, while in the case of community colleges, you tend to fund it with, you tend, you, you tend to fund it in a very different way and govern it, frankly, in a very different way. So the recommendation at the time was that we need to serve Oregon's higher education needs, we need to give more autonomy to institutions on the ground, both the OUS systems, the community college, and the independent college systems, and we need to turn the state role more into a oversight role where the state purchased services, student access services, and got out of them, if you will, the indirect management of the institutions. And that was the vision we presented then. Since that time, a lot of great work has gone on in that vision. The OUS has made a lot of changes. There's been a lot of cooperation that Senator Corcoran has talked about, where there's greater coordination and cooperation among the institutions. There's been a lot of good work done. But still, at this time, as we look 6 years into this, I think it is very timely to step back, ask ourselves again, are we set up to enable the greatest amount of student access, to give the schools the flexibility they need to be really successful in serving education needs, and to take a look at the whole system independently at once. And that's what this bill would do. We'd set up an independent commission to take a look at all of post-secondary education needs, to take a look at different models for governance, to take a look at what we've accomplished over the last 6 years, and to really draw a roadmap for you to think about how you can best serve post-secondary education needs into the future. That's what we hope would be accomplished in 2015. Quite frankly, if you'd had it, I think you would be better served today with that information. If we pass this bill and we execute well and create a strong commission, I think you'll be better off next session in terms of having a framework, a way to talk about how you can best deliver post-secondary education in Oregon across all the sectors. So that's the perspective we bring. We don't see it as an independent college bill or a OUS bill or a community college. We think it's a bill to really think through how to best serve all of post-secondary education needs for Oregon.
Thank you, Duncan. Next, I have Gary and Dean and Lee.
I want to ask.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, if I could, Madam Chair. So, would you answer the redundancy question then?
Yes, I don't think there is a place in Oregon right now where you're getting an independent look at the entire system. There is the joint board. I'm familiar with the joint board, and they work very well on trying to coordinate. But they are really centered. The joint board is really focused on the existing system and how to make the best use of the existing system. What I think we need to do is look at new models for redesigning a system. And again, you don't have to buy whatever model comes out of this commission, but I think we're at a time where we can make the existing system, you know, the current OUS community college, the way we do it now, we can make that work better. And I think the joint board does that. But I don't think right now you have a place to ask, is this the right system? Do we have the right way to budget post-secondary education? Do we have the right ground rules, the right governing structures? That we don't have. And this would be an independent commission. It would be from outside the individual institutions, taking a look at the whole with input from all the sectors, that I think could give you a roadmap, again, if they do their job well, that would that could serve you and the state well. One final note I forgot to mention is funding. We were really disappointed 2015 didn't happen last time, and it was because you all didn't have the resources. We understand that. If you pass it, and assuming you all put energy and put a great commission together, which I'm sure you will, I will try to do everything I can to seek independent funding for this to help support it, because I think it's so important, and I think others will. If you know, you, the legislature and the governor really take this seriously, I think the need is so important that there be possibilities for independent funding.
Just one follow-up, Madam Chair. We talk about government efficiency and being leaner and meaner, and we're $656 million deeper in the hole. So financing something now that we couldn't finance 2 years ago seems problematic. But I just don't understand why we couldn't, if we have this much interest in having this particular discussion, why we couldn't take an already existent commission and, you know, as the legislature asked the question. I'm a little bit lost there, but.
And we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other people to testify. If you haven't gotten your answer or more comfortable feeling, why, we'll just hold the bill over. So, next, Gary Andine and Lee Pelton. Lee Pelton from Willamette, across the street. Nice to have you here.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Sorry you had to come so far.
Well. as Daniel Webster said of another school, Willamette, it is a small college, but there are those who love it. Shall I go first?
You certainly may, if that's all right with Gary. Okay, Gary?
That's perfectly fine. We have a president here who's champing at the bit to answer some of the questions, so I think
he
could.
Well, Lee, if you'll identify yourself for the record and go ahead, we'll.
Yes. My name is Lee Pelton, president of Willamette University, and I want to say, first of all, that I'm not here as a representative of the private sector of higher education. I'm here as a representative of excellence of higher education in this state. This bill is not meant in any way to pit the independent and private sector against the public and state-funded colleges and universities in this state. I am here, obviously, in support of HB 2817. You know, I think it was Isaiah the prophet who said that without leadership, the people will perish. And I want to say that our higher education in our state is in need of a vision, and it's in need of a vision now. And that we need a compelling, a comprehensive, and collaborative vision of higher education. And I believe that this bill offers us one very good opportunity to provide a vision at a time when we need it the most. You know, I've been here for 5 years only, and it seems to me that in recent years that we seem to have lost sight of the forest because of our preoccupation with the trees. And in response to the redundancy question that was asked, I think that the Articulation Commission is really preoccupied with trees and not forests. It's really preoccupied with specific details and not developing, in a comprehensive and collaborative manner, a vision for higher education in this state. It seems to me that the connection between a quality higher education and a sound economy has been drowned out recently in the din of demands for tax rate cuts and refunds. And I'm here to tell you that the price is our young people, and the price is our state, and that we need a compelling vision, one that connects higher education to the long-term needs of the state, and HB 2817 offers us that possibility. Speaking on behalf of the public sector, not too long ago in my lifetime, public higher education was thought of as a public good that deserves public and state support. However, it seems to be that today that it is more viewed as a private good that should be supported by state tuition and private gifts. And as far as I can see, the higher education communities from the public side, that we make wise investments in higher education that are linked to economic development and the future of the state have fallen mostly on deaf ears. What is the problem? Well, here's one problem. Oregon's general fund support for public universities in this state is almost half of what it was a decade ago. Almost half. That's no way to run a business, and that's no way to run a place of excellence. State-funded financial aid for the neediest Oregonians is slipping dramatically, both in terms of the number and the percentage of needy students served each year. The percentage of Oregon's higher education budget that supports student financial aid is less than half of the national average. This is not excellence. And again, I want to suggest that our vision of higher education in this state should include both private and public universities working side by side in partnership on behalf of Oregon's future. As you heard earlier, obviously, after all, the privates produce almost a third of the bachelor degrees in Oregon, more than a third of the state master's degrees, and two-thirds of all first professional degrees. 60% of teacher education degrees come from the private sector. More than 40% of the four-year nursing degrees come from private and independent colleges and universities, and more than a third of the business management degrees come from private colleges and universities. They are a significant asset to this state, and we need to be working side by side. What is the problem? We need a new framework for post-secondary education policy making in this state. We need a new framework for funding post-secondary education in this state. And this bill, HB 2817, brings all of the higher education community together to the table. And it really is our best chance, I believe, it is our best chance to develop a vision on the behalf of this state. I would be very disappointed if my public university colleagues did not support this bill and were to see this bill as not as a collaboration, as a partnership, but as a competition. This bill is a common sense bill. It is a benign bill. It says let's work together as partners and not as competitors, and it works on behalf of all higher education, and I urge you to adopt it in the strongest terms. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? No, go ahead, Gary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Gary Ann Dean, Executive Director of the Oregon Independent College Association. I handed out some testimony to you, and I'm not going to read it all as front and back page, but I'd like to concentrate on the back page for a minute to set this in a context that goes beyond Oregon. The current issue of State Issues Digest, which is published by the American Association of State College and Universities, essentially the national spokesperson for public higher education in this country, contains a major report, this issue, on the likelihood of an imminent structural shift in state higher education policies across the United States. A few excerpts are worth reading to you, reading to all of us, and I think you will note in them an awful lot of Oregon. First, for more than two decades, funding responsibilities for public college and universities have shifted decidedly away from states and toward the students via tuition and other sources. This reallocation has continued to the point that state appropriations now represent less than one quarter of operating revenues at a growing number of public universities. The number here in Oregon we've been hearing is 18%. As a result, calls to deregulate campuses and or rethink governance arrangements are on the rise, signaling that something other than business as usual will be the agenda for higher education policy in a number of states when the present crisis eases. Going on, later on in the report, campus and system leaders looking at past trends, the present situation, and future prospects for state support are increasingly advocating for less regulation and more autonomy. Does that sound familiar? As much as they are for increased funding. At the same time, bold experiments in higher education finance, for instance, student-based vouchers rather than formula-based appropriations, may be inching closer to reality. We have an interesting, parenthetically, an interesting situation developing at the Public University of Miami in Ohio, where they're talking about doing away with resident tuitions entirely and simply moving to full non-resident tuitions for all students at that institution. And then finally, in that same report, the more interesting question, however, is exactly how higher education changes in response to environmental challenges such as those now facing public colleges and universities. If, for example, the wave of the future is for campuses to become more quasi-public and entrepreneurial, what does that mean for core commitments such as providing college access for disadvantaged populations? If students and the private sector are allowed to become more dominant financial stakeholders in the public higher education agenda, what does this mean for an institutional sense of commitment to community, regional, or state priorities? In other words, how much traction can the concept of public purpose have at institutions that are increasingly less public? Most states have statewide post-secondary education agencies, not to govern institutions, but to address concerns such as those just cited above, and to do statewide strategic planning, including examining their state's long-range post-secondary education needs, establishing state goals and objectives, envisioning the resources of all institutions, both public and private, as parts of a larger system, and recommending public policy priorities to legislators and to governors. These agencies pull disparate higher education stakeholders together, building consensus around workforce priorities, professional degree shortage areas, and access strategies for disenfranchised populations. They propose public policy options to state-level leaders, options intended to enrich the diversity of higher education programs and locations throughout the state to establish various measures of higher education performance, such as retention and graduation rates, and to use public dollars in ways that best leverage outside funds from federal and private donors, contractors, and student clients. I'm going to jump ahead. It was said, well, 2 days ago, many of you were at the Oregon Leadership Summit across the street, that Oregon State government needs to stop thinking and acting as an owner and manager of post-secondary institutions, but rather as an investor in post-secondary services and outcomes. The Oregon Business Plan concludes that a new framework has not yet been embraced for post-secondary education policy making in Oregon. The summit leaders endorsed this bill as the instrument that can take us into a domain of policymaking that rationalizes a comprehensive higher education mission for Oregon. And I'll only say one thing about the independent sector. The independent sector is a major resource in the state, fully engaged in many of the public missions you expect from the academic community. We look forward to an elevated and integrated post-secondary education plan for Oregon and believe that HB 2817 is the first step in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Any questions of Mr. Andine? Senator Corcoran?
Well, I just have an observation. I mean, I haven't had my redundancy question answered yet, and I've heard the business pitch on this, but then Mr. Andine comes in, and the president says that he hopes this isn't a competition, but Mr. Andine comes in with basically a statement that bold experiments in higher education finance, for example, student-based vouchers, rather than formula-based appropriations, may be inching closer to reality. And so this looks like a voucher bill to me, or a pre-voucher bill. And so now maybe I figure out why it's not redundant of that other group, because that other group isn't about creating a voucher system. They're about higher education. So it raises a little bit of a red flag for me.
Madam Chair. Senator Burdick.
Were you involved in the drafting of this bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, yes.
The higher education, the OUS and the community colleges and all of the educators are mentioned in this bill as members of the advisory committee. Did you work with them in drafting this bill?
No, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, no.
With a bill that affects all of education in Oregon, why would you not work with the other sectors in drafting a bill like this?
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, we have found that this whole concept of having some kind of an oversight review of post-secondary policy that would include all sectors and all students in the state that might be interested in post-secondary education is something that has not been of interest to those sectors in the last two sessions.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen, very much. Next, I have Rem and Lisa again. Oh, Vic, come on up. Just a second, Rem and Lisa. Representative Backlund, come on up.
Thank you very much, co-chair. Senator Burdick, I would like to answer your questions because they are very pointed and very good questions. The bill came through the House Education Committee, of which I was the chair. We had meetings on the 26th of March, the 16th of April, and the 18th of April. We had full public hearings. We invited as many people to the Education Committee as would like to come, and we did have representatives from the OUS appear, community colleges appear, and of course representatives from the privates as well. I would say very frankly that my note or my feeling was that there was a reservation about the bill. There was a concern. A number of amendments were offered. No one ever actually said I opposed the bill, but it didn't take a legislative genius to know that there was some reservation. There was some concern. But we felt that. We worked through the concerns about as well as we could. There were a number of them. I don't know if you're interested in what they are or were. I'd be happy to relay those to you if you would like. But I do feel that we did have full hearings and that everyone did have an opportunity to participate.
Madam Chair, I guess I appreciate your answer. It's just, you know, with something that affects the whole higher education area in Oregon, it just seemed perplexing and kind of troubling to me that the whole community was not involved from the ground up. And I guess we'll be hearing from them and trying to find out more. I also wanted, if I could, Madam Chair, another question. Are you concerned about what Senator Corcoran raised about the possible switch to some kind of voucher system for funding higher education. Does that concern you?
Co-Chair Clarno, Senator Burdick, to my knowledge, I have not heard the word voucher connected in any way with this bill until Senator Corcoran uttered the word.
Mr. Andean uttered the word.
Okay. No, I have not heard anything about a voucher. Everything I had heard has been pretty well discussed by those who have testified. And if we're talking vouchers, I'm opposed. But I don't think we're talking vouchers. I think we're talking about a post-high school task force that will, by its vision and potential, accomplish a great number of good things for our state.
And final question, Madam Chair.
Senator Burdick.
We are in the midst of a tremendous budget crisis, which is affecting everything we do in this building, and this would be an appropriation. There's per diem expenses allowed for both, as I recall, both the commission and the advisory committee. It will cost money to have this kind of commission at a time when we're not only not starting new programs but cutting existing programs sometimes to a pretty unconscionable degree. And I wanted to get your observations on allocating very precious resources to something like this at this time.
Co-Chair Clarno and Senator Burdick, again, excellent question. The original bill included public financing. Again, we figured out very quickly that Oregon is in an economic recession and a huge budget shortfall. So the bill would be, the Higher Education Task Force would be financed by private donations. The money would go to the Department of Administrative Services, and the existing Oregon statutes would govern that spending like any other way that, or like any other monies are dispersed. So that was one of the concerns of the staffing, also the same thing. One of the tests of this bill is if the private community could raise the money necessary to support financially the post-secondary education task force. We believe they can, and you heard from Duncan Weiss of the Oregon Business Council. They're on record of stepping up to the plate and supporting this. And so there will be staffing or funding, excuse me, but not one penny from the state of Oregon.
Well, and that raised another, and I apologize for temporarily forgetting that amendment had been made, but even with private funding, are you at all concerned that with that private funding might come a lack of objectivity that could possibly harm the credibility of the commission?
Senator Clarno, Senator Burdick, that question has been raised. I don't believe it would. I think the key is the personalities on the advisory committee or on the task force. There will be representation of a wide variety of interests in post-secondary education. I think the overriding concern is going to be what can that group do in the way of conversing, discussing, planning, that sort of thing. I think once you get the group together, how it's being funded is not going to be the primary or even the secondary concern. The concerns are going to be what can this task force accomplish as a group of public and private and community college people. So we did discuss that in the Education Committee. It certainly did surface, but I'm pretty comfortable that the commitment is great enough to the vision of the task force that I hope your concern would be very much minimized.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Gary, if you'll make your comment real brief, because I got four more people, I'm going to start losing committee members here. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary Andean again for the record. I would just to clarify, voucher was not a word in my vocabulary. I was reading from the American Association of State College Universities report where they mentioned that in some states, some of the higher education conversations going on involve voucher systems. This is not something that the OICA or I support. This was a quote from the American Association of State state college universities. And I would remind you that the bill asks for a task force of independent people not affiliated with any of the institutions or sectors. It asks for a task force appointed by the governor and the leadership of the legislature. I envision a task force of ex-governors, for instance, people of the highest caliber with blue ribbon credentials, only interested in the people of Oregon, not the institutions, public, private, or otherwise. So that's what this is asking for.
Thanks for the clarification.
But
just a minute, question.
I have to say, it's not a question. I have to say, you know, he's right. He's quoting from an article, but it's an article and a testimony that he brought before the committee and put on the record. So.
Thank you, Gary.
Understood.
Reem and Lisa?
Rem's such a gentleman.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Again, Lisa Zavala for the Oregon University System. I do have some comments on House Bill 2817A. A couple of things that have been stated today that I feel I need to respond to. You've heard of some of the past task forces and commissions and some of the current and present task forces and commissions that are in place today. You also have... by statute, a state board of higher education that is responsible for the governance and the setting of the vision for public post-secondary education in Oregon. The 2010 commission was formed nearly a decade ago to look at a vision for Oregon's public post-secondary education. Many of the visions and the priorities that was established by that commission are coming to fruition today. Just recently, in April 2002, the State Board of Higher Education commenced yet another review of its mission. That was in response to position the university system, public post-secondary education, and post-secondary education in Oregon in this new fiscal environment. We are facing enrollment pressures, and we needed to address those. This new vision was approved in December of 2002. I've passed out to you information that I've obtained from the State Board that will tell you that we are addressing issues of excellence. We are addressing issues of access, of financial responsibility, and for meeting the student needs in this decade and to come, and we're also meeting the needs of Oregon and its economic development aspirations. There's also presently, Madam Chair and members, the Lumina Project, for which we have the Chancellor, Presidents of the University System, staff of the University System, presidents of private institutions, community colleges, staff involved in. That project is engaged in addressing access issues for Oregon students. I do believe that House Bill 2817 is duplicative. I do believe that the financing issues that have been established in the A engrossed version of the bill are problematic. We would like to see some discussion about the propriety of having private funds support a task force that will address issues relative to public post-secondary education. With regard to a fiscal impact statement from the university system, it is important to recognize that we would be required to provide in-kind assistance contributions to the work of the task force. That doesn't come without a price tag. And I would just like you to take that into consideration when you consider this. And I will just turn that over to Rem unless there are questions.
Questions, committee?
I have one question,
Senator.
It was brought up earlier that there's this vision of a blue ribbon panel, but it's my impression that the OUS, the higher ed board, is pretty blue ribbon. I mean, that's some heavy folks on the committee, and that's on the board of directors. Who are some of those people?
The president of the State Board of Higher Education is Mr. Jim Lucier, who is the president and executive director of Sacred Heart Hospital in Bend. We have representatives from the Oregon Forest Industries Council, Leslie Lehman. I mean, I could name them all if you'd care for me to do so. But, yes, I would like to say that they're all very esteemed and respectable individuals and take their mission and their charge very seriously and to heart, Senator Corcoran. Thank you.
Other questions?
Vice Chair Atkinson and members of the committee, for the record, Rem Nibbins, Oregon Community College Association. And I would like to echo some comments that Lisa has made in terms of looking at the duplication. I listened to Senator Corcoran's comments about the joint boards of articulation and agree that there is a forum right now where these discussions can occur. In addition to that, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission holds public hearings once a month where members of the private and public sectors come together to talk about not only the Oregon Opportunity Grant, but other issues relating to financing and scholarships for public and private students. So there is, at least in my estimation, quite a bit of conversation going on between all the sectors about what's happening, what's going to happen, and how we can work better together. Another thing I want to bring up, there is was handed out to you, I believe, a copy of the -A9 amendments to this, and basically those amendments would look to restore the general fund funding into the bill, which was in the original version on the House side, which was $500,000. And my point, I guess, would be that if they want to fund this privately and do it all with private funding, I don't necessarily see why we need legislation to do that. I think if they wanted to put something together and have these discussions, it would be fine to get on the phone and call everyone up and organize a meeting. And if they wanted to participate by providing funding to make those things happen, that would be fine. I do believe if this is a piece of legislation that is important to the legislature and they want to pass forward, that it deserves general fund support. One of the issues that came up in the legislative fiscal analysis of this, and one of the issues I'm considering, is with the funding and the fundraising, the private fundraising of this, I'm not sure if they know when or how that's going to happen, when those funds are going to become available, how they're going to raise them, when this task force could actually come into play and get their work done. I have not heard in testimony to this point that they already have the funds available to do this. What I have heard is that they would be raising the funds. I don't know what the timeline for that fundraising is, and I think that's something that would need to be clarified. So that's basically all I had to say today. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. We have a representative who'd like to testify. If I could, is there any questions of Lisa or Ren before they leave? Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Barkin, would you like to? Did you want to testify?
No.
Okay. 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 Thank you very much.
Hey, get a light, would you, Brad?
I just saw you on the screen, Senator Corker. It looked like so much fun. I just came running
down. I'm a lot taller on TV, aren't I?
Madam Chair, if I could just state our support for the -A9 amendments, if that would be the way.
Thank you. I would just say you probably don't know, but as chair, when I chair this committee, I do not accept amendments at the last minute like this. No one's had a chance. I mean, if we were going into a work session, so I would need those before we would do a work session. Next, we have Melissa Unger and Cam Brawley.
Nice name.
Melissa, you're signed up first if you'd like to go ahead.
Thank you. Co-Chair Clarno, members of the committee. For the record, Melissa Unger, Legislative Director for the Oregon Student Association. The Oregon Student Association represents students at all 7 public universities, Lane Community College, and Oregon Health and Science University. And students have some concerns with House Bill 2817A. We believe it's unnecessary legislation. As you've heard from members of the public post-secondary education community, we believe it's repetitive that there's commissions, task force, and roundtables that already accomplish this goal. And one example of that is the Changing Directions Roundtable, which Lisa spoke of as the Lumina Project. The Oregon Student Association sits on this roundtable, along with the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, community colleges and workforce development, presidents from all 3 sectors, the Oregon Independent College Association, and the business community, along with OUS. The goal of the roundtable is to come up with innovative post-secondary education policy to look towards the future, how to deal with the problems of access, quality, and affordability in a time of declining state support. The roundtable has met twice, and we're planning on having a third meeting in September to kind of finalize some of our ideas. The Changing Direction Roundtable is grant-funded and is a perfect example of how tools and resources already exist to examine post-secondary education with coordination from all three sectors. We also would like to state that if the state believes that we need such a roundtable, a task force, to move forward to coordinate with all three sectors, then we believe that the state should fund that. We have concerns that a legislative task force would be funded through private funds, but would provide public policy recommendations for Oregon's public post-secondary education. In a time when students are facing skyrocketing tuition, large budget cuts, threats to quality, dramatic increases in enrollment, the Post-Secondary Education Council task force should not be the priority. When similar boards exist and there's already coordination between the sectors, we feel that House Bill 2817 is unnecessary. And if you do want to prioritize such a thing, we would support the Dash A9 amendments. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Melissa. Are there any questions for Melissa? Senator Atkinson.
Melissa, would you consider the Dash A9 amendments an anchor?
An anchor for...
to kill this thing?
Co-Chair Klarno, Senator Atkinson, I believe that the Dash A9 amendments...
makes it really heavy?
Makes it really heavy, and obviously would not be, in this time of a budget crunch, would be something that would not push the bill through quickly, but I think at the same time, the goal of this commission is for the state to make a commitment and coordination of all these three sectors coming together. And if that's really the goal, then I really believe that the state should then make that a priority. And if that's one of their priorities for post-secondary education, then I think that the money needs to be there.
Any further questions? Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
And you don't need to stay if you want to scoot out. Whatever you want to do.
I would love to sit next to
Pam. Pam? Go ahead, Pam. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Pam Croy-Sprawley. I'm the Commissioner of Community Colleges. And I hadn't intended to testify, but some questions were raised by Senator Corcoran about the Joint Boards Articulation Commission and felt I needed to add my 2 cents to the record. I have had a short conversation with Representative Backlund and identified with him that I was going to make sure that the fact that the Joint Boards Articulation Commission was not a conversation in the House committee was because articulation wasn't necessarily the thrust of the conversation there. As you know, because you raised the question, Senator Corcoran, that it has existed since 1992, and its primary purpose is cross-sector articulation of programs and matriculation of students so that they don't lose time or credit as they move from community colleges to the university or from public to private. The fact that there is a perception that they may concentrate on the trees rather than the forest is their job, because making sure that students don't lose credit and actually make that transition successfully is part of what their work is. And it is only because they have worked together for a decade that they now have the opportunity to concentrate on trees, because they have pretty much taken care of the forest. I would also like to clarify that House Bill 2015 that passed last session did have a consensus of the post-secondary systems. And the fact that 2817 came to the legislative session without concurrence or discussion is troublesome. And I have raised this with the independent sector and with the Oregon Business Council that we do have a piece of standing legislation, House Bill 2015, which does in essence what 2817 does. And no, it wasn't funded because of financial difficulties last session, and I'm not sure that situation has changed remarkably, as Melissa so eloquently said.
It's gotten worse.
Any discussion? Any questions? Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Are we, we're going to stand at ease a moment, committee, if we still want to let Senator Brown vote on that one bill.
Sure. And you know what the vote was over in the House?
On this bill?
On this bill?
Mm-hmm.
It's at the bottom of your staff measure summary.
I'm looking for my staff. I didn't see it in the staff measure summary.
39-21.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. And you put your committee. I see. You guys do it differently than we do. All right.
And we can go ahead and close this work service hearing.
Yeah, I'll close the work hearing and work session on 28-17.
And Jim is shaking his head, indicating that she does not care to vote on 28.
She doesn't want to come back and vote on it?
No.
Okay, with that, then, this committee is adjourned. Thank you very much, members.
All right.